from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold. This is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And welcome back to another episode of Locked On Chiefs. I am your host, Chris Clark. I'm the managing editor of LockedOnChiefs.com, and I really do appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate, all, like I have said before, all of the iTunes reviews you were leaving. Thank you very much for all of those. There is not a lot of Chiefs news to discuss right now. As of this recording, OTAs are still going on, but the media has not been allowed. So there is really no new reporting to do from there. The only real big NFL news is there are a couple of rule changes. You have the new NFL kickoff rule, which changes where players can line up. The defense can have eight guys within a 15-yard radius, I believe, of the line of scrimmage from where the ball is being kicked off. The offense has to have all of the guys on the line where the ball is lined up. No more running starts. And a big change at the back end, there is no more wedges allowed. So we will see how that changes the NFL kickoffs and how things turn out that way. Another rule change that was implemented was, and this has already been talked about a little bit, the new helmet rule, where if you target somebody with your helmet, you lower your helmet as you're going to try to tackle them, it is a penalty. And that can also cause you to be ejected. The biggest rule change that has happened is the NFL now has a new rule about the anthem. If you want to protest the anthem, that's fine, but you will not be on the field. You will be staying in the locker room. If a player comes out and does any kind of protesting for the anthem, they will be the team will be fined, not the player, and the team will be able to penalize the player as they see fit. So that is how they're going to take care of the protests against the national anthem. Quick reminder, we are not having a show on Monday. It is Memorial Day, so we will not have a show. On Tuesday, we will be talking with Matt Derrick about the OTAs that are going to be allowed, media is going to be allowed, which is on Thursday. So that will be coming on Tuesday, and I think Wednesday as well. More than likely, it's going to be two shows, usually a lot of information coming from Matt, which we really appreciate. And so here we go. We're going to get back to our interview with Matt Waldman, talking about young QBs and Patrick Mahomes and the phenomenal information he gave us. So thank you again for listening, and here is our conversation with Matt continued. And I completely agree with you. The worst thing you can do for a QB is shake his confidence. And if you get in his head and shake his confidence, it will harm them irreparably.
Yeah. And with Mahomes, what I love about him is, I mean, you know, you can even go to these, you know, QB camps that John Gruden did. And, you know, the one of the things that I really loved about Gruden is that he was kind of sneaky good about interviewing these guys. Like, he'd do kind of the normal shtick, but he'd drop something in there that was kind of like saying, look, you know, no matter how many softballs I'm throwing at you for the sake of the fact that you and your agent agreed to come on to ESPN to do this for us, you know, I know, and I want you to know that I know what's going on with your game and what you really got to work on. I'm going to slip a little bit of this in there, and I'm going to see how you react to that. Are you going to be like Taj Boyd and look like, oh, I'm about to drown here if you don't help me, you know, or are you going to be Teddy Bridgewater and go, yeah, I wanted to go home one year because I was, you know, as a freshman and my mom was sick and I'm, you know, worried about this, that, or whatever. I take responsibility for it. I know nobody really thinks that I'm, you know, I'm a good personality to lead, but I don't really care what anybody thinks. I know what I can do, you know, and, you know, you can kind of see those dynamics with the way Gruden does these things. And Mahomes was one of those guys. It's like, why'd you make that throw? 'Cause I can. You know, I mean, it's like you, and there aren't many guys that can really say that, but he is one of those guys. But people think that because he has that skill, that they think that he doesn't read the field, that they think that he doesn't, you know, that he's too reckless. And there are times that he is, but there are also moments literally just, you know, watching him at Texas Tech and even, you know, from what I remember of the Broncos game a little bit, you know, as you know, I'll get the chance to study it again a little more soon, is, you know, there are moments of absolutely inspired play. I mean, that it's basically the combination of saying, I know I'm one of the only people who can do this, but I also understand what the coverage is doing. And I know that I have a split second of a window to let this thing go before it goes away, but I see it. And if I, and I can hit it. And he did that often at Texas Tech. And I think that that will, that there were moments, you know, with him even last year where he was doing some of that. So it's just a matter again of if they keep the continuity with the coaching staff and the offense, you're going to get a guy who really is going to give you some inspired football. And with the surrounding talent they're putting around with him, like with bringing Sammy Watkins, who was so underused as a receiver in the way that he should be used. This guy was a complete route runner at Clemson. And even then it was rare to see him run complete routes there. And the Bills were like, I mean, Rex Ryan and his group, I mean, they had a quarterback coach, and I believe it was, it wasn't Herman Moore, but it was Rob Moore, the former Cardinals. They were saying that the guy didn't teach them and kind of set them back a bit in terms of the things he was teaching. And Sammy Watkins was a far more complete player. And when he went to the Rams, it was so late in the preseason that he didn't have a chance to really play an expanded role other than be kind of that deep threat, you know, and just kind of expand the vertical part of the game.
And so, thank you for saying that, because that is a huge deal to me. I'm just saying, because people say Sammy Watkins didn't have a great year last year. You don't understand. It's not plug and play with these players.
No.
If you don't know the system and you get into something that you don't, that you're just trying to get into, or you're just trying to learn the system, you're not going to be as productive as you would be if you would have had all training camp working with the same guys, and your timing's going to be off.
That's exactly right. And so, and the Rams are very good at being able to use a variety of options in their offense. And here's the thing. I mean, who they replaced Sammy Watkins with is perfect for what they used Sammy Watkins for last year, which is Brandon Cooks, a guy who is a good wide receiver in the NFL, very nice deep threat. But if you press him, if you play tight man coverage, or you force him to try and make 50-50 plays, you're not going to get a quality play out of Brandon Cooks. That's not his game. Sammy Watkins can really do it all. And I think that he probably wanted an opportunity to play somewhere where he could. So now you have the situation where, you know, Watkins is going to, you know, could be an expanded version of what Jeremy Maclin at his best was, but be an even better version of that. You know, this is a real opportunity for Watkins to become a Pro Bowl caliber player in the way that his talent dictated. And I know that they have enough weapons already in Hill and Kelsey, but he gives a presence on the outside that neither of those guys do in that spread offense that's been really focused on how do we get the matchups against the linebackers and safeties. And when you can get a guy on the outside who can dictate that a little bit more and make it more troublesome for the safety to just stay, you know, focused on what's happening in the middle, that's going to create more openings for other players. And who's to say, I mean, Chris Conley, I mean, look, I've been down in Athens, Georgia and worked down there while he was, you know, while he was playing, and he was a very good fade route runner. And that's a route that that a quarterback like Alex Smith doesn't throw very well. He doesn't throw some of those 50-50 balls and doesn't try for those. It didn't seem to be a part of his vocabulary. It was kind of like, that's too high risk for me, and let's not kind of go there at all. And that limited Travis Kelce, and that limited guys like Conley, who was really good at that, or DeMarcus Robinson, who's really good at that, or Garrett Dieter, who's even decent at that. Let's not, you know, now you look at Mahomes, and I mean, Mahomes would probably, I think that Mahomes would be more likely to throw a wrap around, you know, pass behind his back on a fade route than Alex Smith might. You know, just throw a traditional fade route. I mean, I'm joking, but I mean, you get my point.
See, I'm loving this because this is what I've been saying. Don't get me wrong. Alex Smith played very well at QB for Kansas City for the past couple of years, but he is not the typical QB that is going to get the most out of a player like Chris Conley. And you were absolutely right. He's not going to get the most out of Travis Kelce either. I think it's Matt Harmon, and if I'm incorrect, I apologize. But there's an NFL writer that did average yards average yards of separation per throw or something like that, and Alex Smith led the league at like 3 yards.
Yeah.
His throws were like 3 yards, And for the one game, I think Mahomes is almost half that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And league average is what, 2.5?
Yeah. And Matt and I actually just did a podcast recently for an hour on Dante Pettis, the receiver for the 49ers, because he's my number one receiver and he had him lower. And so we're good friends. It thought it'd be a fun way to talk about process. And what we discovered as our discussion about process was that the way that he views separation, it's got to be the player's got to be an arm's length away from the defender for him to count that as separation on a route. And the way I define separation is, do you have leverage on the defender? Which basically means you could be covered like a glove. And if you're in the position for, you know, if you got into the area where you're supposed to be, you're supposed to catch that ball in the NFL because the details are that tight. So what, as Matt and I were talking about, he goes, that makes sense. And it's like, that explains why you may like someone like, why my metrics may not like a guy like Marvin Jones very much, but you loved Marvin Jones, and Marvin Jones is the guy you compared Dante Pettis to. And so when you look at Mahomes, he's that type of quarterback who's going to go, look, you're even, you're leaving. So I'm throwing the ball, you know, I'm not, you know, you've made that bend with your outside shoulder to get that defender to turn his head to the sideline. That's all I need, because I'm going to put that ball, I'm basically going to throw the ball through the eye of a needle, and it's going to come out the other side right into your hands where it's supposed to be.
You know, man, let's take a second, because I want to come back and ask you exactly about something related to that. Well, and Matt, that's one thing that I think has been really underrated about Mahomes to this point. When I go back and look at his film, and I think you said this in the RSP, and folks, if you haven't gone and gotten the RSP from Matt, go get it, go get last year's, go get the years before, check them all. But in that same vein, it's your metric of do you have leverage on him is more dependent on quarterback accuracy. And I think that's something that Mahomes has that people are kind of underwriting so far.
Oh, they're absolutely underwriting it, because what happens is, you know, we're all learning in this space, especially if we're media analysts. I mean, let's just face it. Most of us are somewhere between the ages of, you know, 20 and 45. You know, most people are in that range. And as a result, you haven't spent 20 years in the NFL studying this as a coach, or being a wide receiver for coach for that many years, or you haven't dedicated yourself to a certain process. And you're going to, and if you have, even then, you're going to learn lessons. I mean, I've been doing this for 13 years. And I've learned lessons about things, and a lot of them I've talked about just in the past, you know, 20 minutes. And that's come through studying play by play after play, and talking to coaches and talking to consultants and players, and, you know, learning these things, or even them just giving me feedback and going, that's exactly how you need to see that, you know. And so when you talk about accuracy, you know, they sometimes, when people are coming from it from the angle I just described, they're looking for the rules. It's kind of like someone who's a writer trying to learn how to write. They're looking purely at the grammar, so much so that they may miss the spirit of what was being written and the purposeful breaking of the rule. And they're harping on the minutia of the rules and not seeing the broader spectrum. And so when you look at Patrick Mahomes, people would look at when he made some inaccurate throws and they'd say, oh, well, his footwork's always off. He has a weird arm motion sometimes. He can get too lazy with how he, you know, throws it from odd angles and does some of the things. But they miss that some of the things that he does that are correctable, those are like easy things to correct. You know, I mean, is it harder to learn appropriate grammar, or is it harder to write a Pulitzer Prize winning novel? I mean, you know, I would say that it's a lot harder to do the latter. and a lot of times what's in a novel is going to have, you know, a lot of rules that are broken. There's going to be a lot of subtlety and nuance to that game. And Patrick Mahomes has that nuance to his game, you know, and so, he's able to look, you know, handle the pocket pressure and move away, reset and fire and do it accurately. That's harder to do than the one play where he got too excited in the red zone and hurried his feet too fast and ended up overthrowing the thing and ended up getting intercepted. And people are going to take that one set of plays and cherry pick that and say, he's not an accurate quarterback. So it's a, It's the same thing as what's happening with Lamar Jackson in the pocket when they say Lamar Jackson's a runner. And when you look at his game, if you watch him maneuver the pocket, he may not be the most accurate of the passers right now, but what he has to learn is a grammatical type of issue. The things that he does in the pocket are more on the level of, like, you know, New York Times best-selling author of fiction type of things, where he's able to stay in the pocket, maneuver away, still read the coverage, manipulate it, and find an open man. He might be one of the best pocket players of this recent draft class. And he got, you know, kind of broad brush stroked into being, he's just a runner and he's not a good passer, when in fact he might be the most pocket savvy of the quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes kind of got broad brushed in that way too, in the same way that he got broad brushed for being in an air raid system and that he wasn't going to be intellectually sound enough to be a good quarterback in the NFL, when in fact, you know, we learn later about, you know, the types of things that he did in terms of the calls that he made on the field and the freedom that he got. And that tells you right there that that's a higher level than what you would expect. So, you know, these are things that are going to come to light more and more with him as we watch him make play after play after play.
Well, and you specifically talk about moving around in the pocket, and that's something that is not something that you can easily teach. It's more of an intangible that you either know how to do that or you don't. That's something that Alex Smith struggled with consistently in his time in Kansas City. And to have a QB that is going to be, and I'm not going to say the exact opposite, but almost an opposite in that regard, is going to be something that's really going to work to Kansas City's advantage.
Yeah, because, you know, there's two types of quarterbacks out there, really, when you think about it. There's taskmasters, kind of like task-oriented guys, and they can be really good. Tom Brady is the ultimate task-oriented quarterback. You know, if you give him a task and you give him the parameters of what he's supposed to look at and diagnose and do it to a certain letter, he's going to do it to the letter every time. If you tell him that he's going to have to improvise off rhythm or things, or that the task he's given suddenly blows up in his face, that's where he's going to have problems. But a guy like, you know, Steve Young used to be more of a creative quarterback who learned to be a taskmaster. Marcus Mariota, as fast as he is as a runner, he's a better taskmaster quarterback than he is a creative quarterback. When you look at creative quarterbacks, you think of John Elway, Brett Favre, Russell Wilson. You know, those are guys, you know, Deshaun Watson to a degree. Those are guys who, or even Carson Wentz to some degrees as well, Ben Roethlisberger. These are guys that basically they can perform the tasks, but when they're really dangerous is when the defense says, yeah, we're gonna take that away from you. Now what are you going to do? And they're going to turn the tables on those guys. They're going to paint their way out of the corner. And so, you know, having that added element just means that they do well with freedom. But the problem is that sometimes where they make mistakes is because they took too much freedom. Whereas a guy like Smith, when they make mistakes, it's because they don't give themselves enough freedom. And so it's the two sides of the same coin, basically, you know, the way that you're looking at this. And people are more comfortable though with structure, because that's that cover your asset mentality, especially in the draft and how you draft players, because they, you know, GMs and owners, they want results and they want something that is going to be predictable. And you know, it goes to fantasy football as well, is that, you know, you want these predictable ways of looking at information and lowering your risk. And if you're a newbie or you're not a professional at what you're doing, then it's probably the safest way and the biggest chance you have to meet a professional or to be on a higher level of play to win money or to win games or whatever the format is that you're talking about. You know, this kind of approach, especially in 10 NFL teams where they're like, look, you know, when they're not drafting these guys early based on talent alone, because if it was just based on talent, Tyreek Hill would have been a first round pick. We all know that that would have been the case based on just talent, but based on off field, based on, you know, where the guy went to school or where he ended up transferring to school or his production or whether he fit the prototypes of certain types of issue, you know, certain types metrics you're looking for or measurements. And those things either raise your risk scale for investing a ton of money in you or they lower it. And the higher round picks are the guys that the teams ultimately who the guys who pull the trigger to say, we're writing the checks for these guys. I want to feel comfortable about who this guy is. They want low risk. So they're going to pick these guys who, you know, have some of those elements in there. And so there may be some times where a guy who probably was more of a second round talent gets first round money because he's got first round resume bullets that are easy to say, well, if we screwed up on the kid, at least we can say to the media or say to my boss, we did all the right things to look for him. We didn't bring in some, you know, scattershot, you know, technique guy from a small school who plays in some odd program and, you know, never won a national championship and may not say all the right things. And we didn't bring him in as our first round guy. We didn't spend that kind of money on him because that's not the, you don't end up with the insult to injury of like people questioning the intelligence or the common sense of your pick. So, you know, when you look at a guy like Mahomes, you know, it was refreshing to me to hear, you know, I'm sitting here, you know, doing all this, doing analysis and hearing what, you know, the draft community, especially the draft media talks about, and you would have thought Mahomes was going to be a second round pick until the Chiefs traded up to get him, you know? So the fact that the Chiefs traded up, that tells you that I think that Andy Reid and company were on the same page. They knew what they wanted. They knew how special he could be. And, you know, we're about to go on that journey to see if it comes to fruition over the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And I think this is a good spot to take a little break. And when we come back, I want to hear about whatever that special scenario is you hinted at before we started recording. Folks, make sure you tune in because we're all going to take a look and rewatch the film, and we're going to meet back in a few weeks, and we're going to go through and talk about the specifics about what's about to happen. And we're going to look at the Denver game in particular, and Matt's going to give us his insight because I can look at a game and see what happened. Matt can look at a game and see what's going to happen. So, Matt, thank you for your time today, and I'm really looking forward to that one.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it as well. And I got to note this because it's kind of funny. I've been so excited about Mahomes because there's another guy who is a big rival, who's playing on a big rival of y'all's, who I also liked second to Mahomes, and I don't like that team, but happens to be Chad Kelly of the Denver Broncos. I would really enjoy watching an AFC rivalry with two quarterbacks who have that kind of mindset, and they both share that. So it'll be interesting to see if these two guys develop around the same time and get the opportunity to do so.
Oh, that's going to be juicy to watch.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, folks, make sure you check out Matt on his YouTube channel as well as at RSB, and I'll give you links in the show notes for that. And Matt, thanks again for being with us today.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review. And reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTreseyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.